So, I have a question for you. What do the following items have in common? Folgers coffee, Post-it notes, Skittles, and Budweiser. Well, the answer is that all of them are manufactured in America. According to data from the Brookings Institute, the U.S. is the world's second largest manufacturer in terms of the output of goods. We haven't always been in second place, though. Some decades ago, the United States led the globe in manufacturing before gradually giving that spot up to China. But some experts say we might be inching back towards the top again. In the last year, companies like General Motors, Toyota, Samsung, they've all announced plans to bring back some of their manufacturing to the U.S. On the one hand, this shift is practical. Over the last 2 years, the pandemic showed the vulnerabilities of the global marketplace, particularly when it comes to supply chain demands. And on the other hand, more and more people are wanting to buy local, whether that means something was made in their own community or their country. For this week's segment of The Business of Boston, we take a look at a Massachusetts company that's manufacturing its products here in the U.S., and then learn a little bit more about what that model means for businesses and the economy. Joining me now is Sheila Duncan. She is the owner of the business and trademark Trouble the Dog. Sheila, thanks for coming to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'll start with initial introductions. Who or what is Trouble the Dog?
Trouble the Dog is a comfort toy who was originally designed by my then 12-year-old niece, Kendra. We had a lot of cancer losses in my family, so she was very tuned into the word cancer. And she was at my home one winter evening back in 2006. The St. Jude Telethon came on. She was just doodling, and she looked up and she said, oh, I have to help those kids. And she immediately drew Trouble the Dog in one of those divinely inspired moments that you hear about on Oprah. And since that time, we have gone through many, many iterations, but Trouble is now an American-made global children's character who's traveling the world comforting kids.
That's a great story.
Thank you.
Who is Trouble for? Is it just for patients? Is it for other kids, even adults?
Well, interestingly, you say that Trouble is for anybody who needs a hug. Children who, a lot of kids now are having night terrors. When I was young, they called them nightmares. Kids who are bullied at school, kids who are having trouble at school, kids who maybe have a little bit of difficulty learning, whatever it happens to be. It doesn't need to be a monumental problem, but even big, tough grown-ups like Marines sleep with Trouble the Dog.
So I want to talk a little bit about your company. You're based in Marblehead.
Yes.
And up until a few years ago, Trouble was manufactured overseas. But today he's made in America in a plant in Arizona. Why is that important for you to move your production here to this country?
When we originally had Trouble made in China, I had a wonderful contact there. I trusted her. She was great. She left to have a baby, and the gentleman that I worked with was a little more difficult. I started to think, why not have Trouble made here in America? And to my surprise, it was much more difficult than I had ever imagined. Took me about, 6 months all day, every day to find someone who I could work with. And so the woman that I have connected with in Arizona at the American Bear Factory said to me, let's take time, let's sit down and figure this out. And that's exactly what we did years ago. And she's been a stupendous partner since that day.
And it sounds like you've touched on this a little bit already, but can you tell me more about the challenges with manufacturing here versus overseas?
Well, when I was working with China, the quality was good. As I say, the representative that I worked with was very good, but the time difference was difficult. The language barrier was difficult. So I would email her and, of course, not hear from her until the next day. When I answered her, same thing. So there was a lag. I also had difficulty trying to describe about color or the thickness of the material or whatever with this second gentleman. With my manufacturer in Arizona, I can't say enough good about her because her quality control is just as good, if not better, than my own. And I can pick up the phone and talk to her on a Sunday night if need be. So I'm very, very fortunate.
Now, I also want to talk about another part of Trouble's story. He's connected to the Kennick Foundation, which donates this toy to kids in need. Can you talk about that a little bit, and specifically here in Massachusetts?
Well, we formed the Kennick Foundation because since the day Trouble has been drawn, actually, since our first coloring book, our first coping mechanism, which was a medallion, kids have said, can you give this to another child? Can you give Trouble to Joey because he's in the hospital or whatever it happened to be? So we formed the Kennick Foundation to be able to create a giving machine, if you will. And we decided to donate at our cost Trouble dogs to first responders. And the response has been phenomenal. So Trouble has traveled right across the country in ambulances, fire trucks, cruisers. And he is given to children by a police officer or a firefighter, whatever it happens to be, at the moment of impact. And it has really, it's taken my breath away. It's been so impactful.
And what keeps you going in this venture? What keeps you so passionate about this project?
The kids. The kids will say to me, we call Trouble an angel in disguise because that's what he is. Kids will say, when I hug Trouble, he wags his tail. When I talk to Trouble at night, he answers me. So there's a magic to Trouble that I will keep going until he is a cartoon or an app, and he is beamed into children's rooms. He's going into shelters, hospitals. He's definitely meant to be.
That's a lovely story.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
That's Sheila Duncan, the owner of the business and trademark Trouble the Dog. Well, listening into this conversation was Gregory Stoller. He's the owner of the blog and host of the podcast called The Language of Business. He's also a senior lecturer of strategy and innovation at Boston University's Questrom School of Business. Gregory, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
So first of all, what are your reactions to what you just heard?
Well, first of all, Sheila, thank you for, on a number of different levels, for what you're trying to do, not only for the kids, but also bringing manufacturing back to the States. I'm pleasantly surprised. WeatherTech, which a lot of people know as the floor mat company, was one of the earlier companies, probably within the past decade, to proudly talk about U.S. manufacturing and the fact that all, if not all, most of their products are manufactured with the U.S. seal of approval. It's been a long time. You know, people might forget that Lowell, Massachusetts was named after Francis Cabot Lowell, who was huge into the textile business in the 1800s. And to your point at the opening of this segment, you mentioned that so much has gone overseas. It's nice that manufacturing is not only returning to the United States, but in some cases, Boston, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and New England.
And Gregory, why do you think that's happening? What's going on there?
I think there are a couple of factors at work here. Many of the points Sheila has covered, you know, there's a big difference, and I do a lot of work with China with our students, both at the undergraduate and graduate levels of Questrom, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to speak, read, and write Mandarin. So I'm sympathetic to a lot of the issues that Sheila has noted. I think that right now there are three major forces at work. The first is that the Fed has raised interest rates and oil and gas prices are at all-time highs. So as a result, it's just less expensive to be able to do business locally. Second, we're in the midst of the Great Resignation, where people are really not at liberty to have excess staffing, let alone bare minimum staffing. And again, it's a lot easier to find people who can drive or bicycle or walk to work as opposed to relying on somebody overseas. And third, and this is what I personally learned from COVID, is that family's everything, and that this has been a good opportunity to not only revisit your familiar roots, but also take pride in your community. And I think more so than ever that I can remember in recent years is that taking a lot of pride in not only made in America, but also made in Massachusetts has meant something more so significantly than it probably has in a long, long time.
And can you talk a little bit about supply chain issues that we've seen in recent years and how the pandemic has played into this a little bit more?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that a lot of what happened during the pandemic was an outgrowth of necessity being the mother of invention, is that companies still needed to pay their workers, companies still needed to support their customers. So as business owners, we all did whatever we needed to do to literally and figuratively keep the lights on. A lot of those emergency measures, I think, have become now a permanent part of different companies' DNA. And I think that, yes, it was convenient to outsource overseas. The labor costs were less, the product quality was good enough, and the shipping lanes were open. So why not? You could maintain or you know, even steadily increase or improve your margins over time through a plethora of different factors. That's no longer possible anymore. So I think that whether it was planned or involuntary, companies have now said local manufacturing for the moment is working. Now, if the Fed continues to raise interest rates, if minimum wages continue to increase and oil doesn't crest and start coming down, maybe people will start flocking back overseas. But I don't think it's an all or nothing proposition. I think companies are now open more than ever to having a variety of plan Bs, plan Cs, and plan Ds, because you just don't know what the next 6 to 9 months are going to bring.
Now, we've been talking about this idea of made in America on a larger sense. What about made in Massachusetts or New England? I know you talked a little bit about the history. You brought up Lowell. What about this region's manufacturing trends? What can we expect in the future, do you think?
So thank you for mentioning language of business. This is a project that I've been involved with for 11 years, both on a video cast level and a podcast level. We were formerly on weekly commercial television with WBIN, and I essentially, for every episode, interview four entrepreneurs under a different theme. In 2016, which was, you know, 6 years ago, we interviewed New England Shirt Company as one of the episodes being made in America. New England Shirt Company is a large supplier for Brooks Brothers. They are, again, locally one of the few companies that still continue to manufacture locally. If you think about New Balance, if you think about Hologic, that does a lot of manufacturing both in Massachusetts and also in Connecticut, and Waters Corporation out in Milford, I think you have a number of companies that are not only practicing what they preach by supporting made in the United States, but also now proudly waving that flag of made in Massachusetts or made in New England.
Now, I can imagine that policy plays a pretty big role in how all of this works. So what would you say that as a state, as a country, what can we be doing to encourage more local manufacturing?
It's a good question as well. I think that, you know, several years ago, you know, we're talking 10 or 15 years, a lot of cities and towns in the Bay State were saying that they're going to give tax breaks for companies that want to set up shop here. And that will either be taxes breaks on real estate or payroll or stuff of that ilk, that they give them an incentive to set up shop and keep it running in Massachusetts. For some reason, and obviously I know that our state and federal legislators have had certainly enough on their plate trying to get us successfully through the pandemic, but I haven't heard a lot of those discussions with the same enthusiasm as I heard 10 or 15 years ago. And I think that right now, companies are doing whatever they can to not only remain in business, but remain profitably in business. And to the extent that the legislature, whether at the state or the federal level, can reinvigorate those discussions and give companies and entrepreneurs a really good long-term incentive to set up shop or continue to set up shop in the Commonwealth, it can only be good for everybody.
That's Gregory Stoller. He's the owner of the blog and host of the podcast called The Language of Business. He's also a senior lecturer of strategy and innovation at Boston University's Questrom School of Business. Gregory, thanks for being here.
Thanks again for the invitation. And Sheila, good luck to you and your team.
Thank you.
Did you like this edition of The Business of Boston? Do you have ideas for a future segment? If so, join our texting group and let us know. Get started by texting Boston to 617-766-0382. That's Boston to 617-766-0382.